ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Orbiting the planet at maximum velocity. The moon with rebel base will be in range in 30 minutes.
Time travel is possible through the radio and through the mind. So just remember, stick together and everything will be fine. Unless Dan and Jeff meet Frankenstein.
Let us to the house of Frankenstein.
May the Force be with you.
And may the Force be with you.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's time travel.
Okay, can you hear me, Roxanne?
Yes, I can.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so this is actually time travel, and it's been a while since we've been with you after our four-year run at WRNG Radio, and we're absolutely thrilled to be back. This is actually our inaugural show at our new studios, and we're broadcasting live at the Chatterbox in Augusta, New Jersey. We really had a great run during our days at WRNJ Radio, and now we hope to continue bringing you new and exciting shows each month with many wonderful folks in television, radio, film, animation, and things of that nature. I am really happy to welcome our guest, Roxanne Tozer. Roxanne has been publishing the wonderful Non-Sport Update magazine since 1990, which is a magazine for collectors of non-sport trading cards that focuses on movies, television, sci-fi, comics, music, and much more. You can learn a lot more about this publication at Roxanne's website, which is www.nonsportupdate.com. Roxanne is also an expert on something near and dear to my heart and a lot of yours, Wacky Packs. And that's what we're going to be exploring today. Hi, Roxanne. Welcome to Time Travel.
Hi, Dan. Thank you.
Hi, Roxanne. This is Jeff here. Welcome to Time Travel as well.
Hi, Jeff.
So we're really excited to have you this morning, and it's a little cooler out there. It's not as hot as it was last week. I know you're in Pennsylvania. We're in Jersey.
Yeah, about the same here.
Before we get into the topic of Wacky Packs, I was wondering if you could share with us a little bit of history behind the Topps company. And beyond baseball cards, if you could talk a little bit about Topps and also maybe one of my favorite artists, Jack Davis.
Jack Davis is terrific. I've spoken with him on the phone several times recently.
No kidding.
And he's just great. He was having a little bit of back problems that had him laid up for a while, and he wasn't able to do his drawings, but he's doing better now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of my favorites, too. And as far as the Topps Company, as you know, they've been around for a long time. In the mid-50s, they started producing non-sports cards, and they have not stopped since. If it wouldn't be for Topps, I don't think there would be a non-sport card market, because they have stuck with the trading card industry through thick and thin.
And with the other companies that kind of spruced up and try to imitate them, Topps really seems to be the big survivor in this business.
Yes, I always think that they are the leader. There's other companies that have been somewhat jealous and tried to copy, but they never make it.
Topps of the morning to you.
Yep.
And coming back, just getting back a moment to Jack Davis, my first memory of him really beyond whether it's Mad Magazine or things of that nature would be the monster cards that I would collect as a kid. when I would go up to Boston, my grandfather would surprise me and my brothers with those wonderful monster cards. I'm sure you have the complete set of those.
Oh, yes. 1959 Funny Monsters. You'll Die Laughing. Sometimes it's called You'll Die Laughing. Sometimes it's called Funny Monsters.
Exactly. You'll Die Laughing cards are the ones that I was more familiar with as a kid.
Yeah,
of course.
Well, but I think the wrapper says Funny Monsters.
On the cover, right.
That's
but
safer for kids.
The cards You'll Die Laughing.
Excellent. So moving on to this this love affair that we have with Wacky Packs, Wacky Packages, I want to take our listeners sort of back in time to what led up to the origin of Wacky Packs around 1967 at Topps. And I know Mad Magazine had an influence on that. And I was wondering if we can jump in the time machine and you can take us back to that period of time.
Well, Woody Gelman was the person who really started the idea of Wacky Packages because of Mad Magazine and the parodies in Mad Magazine. And he had some very talented young artists working with him, Art Spiegelman, Jay Lynch, and a host of others. And that's what really got it started. Well, the very first Wacky Packages that they did were in 1967, and they were on a cardboard stock. You had to moisten the cards to stick them anywhere, and they weren't nearly as popular. And then in 1969, they did a larger set called Wacky Acts, also on cardboard, with punch-out pieces.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until 1973 that they really started Wacky Packages.
As far as this traditional stickers that we all love.
Ones that we all love and the ones that the guys all got involved with.
Now, you mentioned Woody Gelman. He was the head of Topps, their new product division at that time.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
And it's my understanding that Len Brown, who had worked on the Mars Attacks series, I believe he had seen something in Mad Magazine, a parody of Salem Cigarettes, and that was kind of like what launched this. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. Mm-hmm. And Len Brown was certainly instrumental. Right along with Woody Gelman.
Mm-hmm.
And the outlandishness of Mars Attacks and upsetting parents and things like that might have led to some of the outlandishness in Wacky Packages.
Yeah, I think Topps always likes that. That gives them a lot more publicity.
The thing that attracted me to Wacky Packs, I'm 41 years old, and so I was a child in the 70s, so those early years, I just loved how they skewered mainstream society. You know, I'm reading Mad Magazine and I'm reading Cracked and all that type of thing. But these stickers to take all these products that I'm so familiar with that are in our refrigerator and our closet, and not to mention how beautifully illustrated they were and the jokes on them, it was just too much to pass up. And then there was the collectible aspect of it and trying to get all of them and whatnot.
Right, right. So certainly something that was very attractive to young children. I think mainly boys, but I imagine some girls. I know some girls were into them, too.
Well, my cousin Maureen had all over her refrigerator, and she was a girl. So
that's one
I know dear to my heart.
But I think boys like to make those kinds of jokes even more than girls, though. Things like that are really funny.
So,
having had three sons.
So I understand that having three sons, that's really what got you interested, I believe, in Wacky Packs.
Yeah, well, it got me interested in cards in general.
Oh, okay.
My oldest son started collecting baseball cards because his two cousins lived a block away, and they were just a little bit older than he was. And, of course, he wanted to do everything that they did. They were collecting baseball cards, so he started collecting baseball cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw absolutely nothing wrong with that. It kept him occupied for a while. I would go to the corner store and buy a whole box when they came out. And my middle son also enjoyed collecting baseball cards. And then there was Harris, our youngest son. And he was not remotely interested in sports cards. But he liked going to flea markets with us much more than the older two.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I said to him, why don't you think about collecting non-sport cards? I know we have some of those around, because when I would go to the corner store and buy the baseball cards, I'd see dark shadows and things, Batman cards, and I would always buy a few packs of those. So we gathered up those cards around here, and Harris was very interested in those, and that's really how we started in non-sport cards. And, of course, wacky packages were a very big part of collecting non-sport cards.
So you went from just a mom who's trying to make her sons happy to really almost, if I can flatter you a little bit, almost to an expert on non-sport cards in general.
Yes. There were not too many women involved at that time, very few, and there weren't any books.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that you learned from other collectors or just by buying the cards and sorting them. And it was hard to even know in what part of the country certain cards would be issued.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't issued all over.
Did someone coin the phrase non-sport, or was it just people would just say, this is your sports cards, these are non-sport? Do you know, did someone actually coin the term?
Probably somebody did, but I really don't know who that was. And I see nothing wrong with that term. There are some people who don't like it and think they should be called entertainment cards, at least.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if you can really call war cards entertainment cards. It's just too,
sure,
many,
yeah,
too many subjects in non-sport cards that do not fit the word entertainment.
Well, that's it. If maybe if half the industry is sports and the other half is non-sport, it's a perfect name for it.
Yeah, I think so, too.
You mentioned about the Batman cards and the great Norman Saunders painted the Batman cards.
Yes, yes.
And also, can you talk a little bit about his work with Wacky Packages?
Well, he certainly was very much involved. He did a lot of the finished paintings. The people like Jay Lynch and Art Spiegelman would do some of the roughs, and then Norm would do the finished paintings. And his work is just great. He was just involved in so many of the great non-sport card sets, like Mars Attacks and Civil War.
I love it. It was a Classics Illustrated comic book cover, the painted cover of Frankenstein's Monster. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not, but
I know that he did a lot of pulp covers.
And the pulp covers, I think that's, you know, because I certainly was into Wacky Packages as a kid, but I think I first learned his name through comic books, and when I specifically the Frankenstein's Monster, a painted cover he did for Classics Illustrated, and how it was a little bit like Boris Karloff, but a little bit independent, and it showed the monster actually having some fear. And I think that's when I first really learned his name, and I wanted to learn everything about his career because I'm a big Frankenstein Monster fan, and then that's how I realized he was involved in Wacky Packages. So thanks for talking about him.
pardon me. His daughter, Zina,
mm-hmm.
is a very talented artist, and we're very friendly with her.
Great.
She lives in New York.
Excellent.
Roxanne, we're going to just take our first break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some more memories of, on our end, being that first generation Wacky Packaholics, and then we'll dive more into the origin of the cards. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, and we're with Roxanne Tozer, the world's leading authority on all things Wacky Packs. We'll be right back.
What do the following have in common? H.G. Wells,
Colonel George Taylor,
the Doctor, Layla, and K-9,
the Terminator,
Dr. Sam Beckett,
Bill S. Preston, Esquire, and Ted Theodore Logan,
Mr. Peabody and his boy Sherman,
Dr. Emmett Brown, and Marty McFly.
Guessed it yet? Yes, they've all had great adventures by way of time travel. To this list, we would like to humbly submit two more names, our own. I'm Dan.
And I'm Jeff.
Join us for Time Travel, a new show
right here online at timetravelispossible.com.
Time travel is possible.
Charlie was his name, we hear.
He had an engine and he sure had fun. He used good and plenty candy to make his train run.
Charlie says, love my good and plenty. Charlie says, really rings the bell. Charlie says, love my good and plenty. Don't don't know any other penny that I love so well.
You worked too hard, you ate too much, the cheesecake made you greedy. Let your aching head and stomach hear this message from old Speedy. Alka-Seltzer, plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. Ah, those Speedy Alka-Seltzer bubbles burst into action to relieve your upset stomach and aching head fast. It was only as directed. Oh, what a relief it is. What a relief.
It's about time, it's about space, about strange people in the strangest place. It's about time, it's about flight, traveling faster than the speed of light. About space people and a brave crew, as through the barrier of time they flew. Past the Roman senators, past an armored knight, past the firing Minutemen, to this modern sight. It's about time for you and me to meet these people of amazing feats.
Dan and Jeff, and you're listening to Time Travel.
And now, it's about time, it's about time, it's about time.
And we're back. Roxanne, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. We're with Roxanne Tozer, and we're talking about Wacky Packs. And, you know, when I was a kid, I remember paying, I want to say maybe 20 cents for a pack.
Oh, I think you paid even less than that.
You think it was a little less? I'm picturing going down the bottom of the hill to Food Town, to the old card book nook, and with my newspaper route money. Maybe it was 15 cents, but I always remember getting doubles and triples, and that was always annoying. There was always a couple of cards that were so hard to get.
Yes.
And yes. The other thing
if
is...
If you would see some of the sheets before they were cut up, you would see that some cards were duplicated many times. And some were only on there once or twice. And so that's what would happen.
You know, there'd always be that one kid in school that would have like six blunderbreads. And, you know, you had none.
Right.
And he'd kind of like hold you hostage. You know, I'll give you a blunderbread for six of your whatevers or, you know.
Yeah.
The collector's market begins.
Trading was a big deal, too. I remember in like fourth, fifth grade. Trying to cook up all these massive trades with my friends and stuff like that. And when you remember Crazy Labels, of course?
Oh, yeah.
When those came on the scene, I remember being up in Boston and being in the store, and I saw these new cards called Crazy Labels. And so I immediately bought maybe seven or eight packs, and they were nice, but they weren't as impressive to me as Wacky Packs. So I had this bright idea. So when I got back home, the very next week at the lunchroom table, I'm showing everybody these cards and they're freaking out because they're not in New Jersey yet, you know, and so I started trading all of the cards for the rarest of the Wacky Pack cards.
That was really neat.
Uh-huh. And then, oh, maybe a month or two later, next thing you know, boom, they're on the scene and they're very readily available here in Jersey. And I now have a complete Wacky collection. So,
Well, what a good deal.
I think so.
You're an importer.
The art on the Wacky packages was far superior to Crazy Labels.
That's probably it. And even the jokes.
Yeah, right.
So what's one of your favorite memories of, say, with your three sons with the Wacky Packs?
Well, actually, believe it or not, I can't remember any one of my sons actually collecting Wacky Packages.
Uh-oh. Is that true?
It wasn't until later when I started buying large collections of non-sport cards and there would be Wacky Packages in them.
Okay.
That I became interested in Wacky Packages. And at a much later age, as a mother of three sons.
Can you remember?
I just fell in love with them as soon as I saw them.
Do you remember the first Wacky Pack that you ever saw? Can you recall what it was?
No, I certainly don't. But I always liked Wheaties. That's always been one. Maybe because I eat Wheaties every morning for breakfast.
I can remember my first cards were literally Cheapios, Graysen Bran, and Gatorade, the parody of Gatorade. And those were, I put them on my door.
Uh-huh.
And I was about 7 years old. That's my earliest memory of Wacky Packs.
Yeah.
And those are probably the only ones that I ever took off to stick on something.
Uh-huh.
You know, I never wanted to do that afterwards. So I would, you know, put them in my books or in a shoebox. What kid didn't put them in a shoebox?
Right. and with a rubber band around them.
Absolutely.
Very bad, very bad. That's why the number one card or sticker is always more valuable, because the rubber band would damage it.
But, you know, when you were a kid, you weren't thinking about the value.
Of course not.
You know, how many kids in the 50s took their baseball cards and put them down near their bike so they can make that fancy little noise when they're riding?
We were visiting our oldest son in Vienna, Virginia, one time, and we were driving down the main street, and there's a couple antique shops on that street,
mm-hmm.
and we saw a chest with wacky packages stuck all over it.
Oh, no kidding.
Gee, should we buy this chest and put it on eBay? Chest with wacky packages?
One-of-a-kind item.
One-of-a-kind item, right.
Now, going back a little bit again to 1967 with those die-cut cards,
right.
There were about 44 of them in that set, and there's two of them in particular that are really rare, valuable.
Yes,
Cracked rats. Animals and Rats. Rats Crackers, the Ritz parody.
Rats and Cracked Animals.
Could
right.
you tell us a little bit about the story behind those two cards?
Well, as far as most people know, there must have been a cease and desist letter sent about those two. The company didn't want their products parodied, and so they had to be pulled from production, and they had to put in another one. What the heck is the other one? I can't even think what it's called. Oh, Crack Jerk.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that they substituted for those two.
What's the value of those? How many of those cards do you think exist, and what would the value be today?
Well, the value is pretty high on those. Let's see. I've seen them listed for as high as $2,500 to $3,000 each.
Wow.
Well, that's worth a lot more than a box of Ritz crackers from that time.
Yeah. So, but they're just not around because, as I said, I used to buy a lot of collections with wacky packages,
mm-hmm.
and I would seldom see those cards.
Wow. Now,
stickers, whatever you want to call those particular ones.
A lot of people don't realize that there were some companies out there that loved the exposure and to be parodied. I mean, it helped their sales. And then there were other companies that were, too big for that and against it or what have you. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, was it Donald's or?
I think, was it Burger King or McDonald's, I think, the Big Mac?
Yeah, the Big Mac.
The Big Yuck.
They said that they expected to be parodied at some time,
mm-hmm.
but they asked Topps to cease and desist. They just got numerous cease and desist letters. And Lipton, it was Liptorn, was the parody.
Mm-hmm.
They were the ones that tried to sue Topps, but they lost that suit because nobody was confusing things.
So in the beginning, they would basically come out with certain parody cards and then get a cease and desist, and then eventually they would get these letters in advance saying, don't do a parody of our product.
Right, right. And most of the time, they would just say, well, we will cease and desist because they weren't going to reprint them and they were already out in the market.
Right.
And they didn't care all that much.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then in later series, when they did some of the newer series, they did not use those products again or certain companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like when they would bring the series back, you mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are there any stories or
why they wouldn't use those again?
Are there any stories or urban legends out there of any young kids that maybe collected the wacky packages and then were actually scared of the real product because they thought it was gross or something? Have you ever talked to anybody like that?
No, I have not.
Okay.
I can't imagine that.
No, so.
Yeah, it was.
Can you?
No, I just figured I should ask because if they sent all these cease and desist, wanted to see if it had any effect.
Yeah,
I don't think when you get it, but
I
don't think when you
really don't think so.
Battered fingers.
I don't think when you bite into a box of Ritz, you're going to find a bunch of rats. No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
A 3-year-old. Oh no.
So
they weren't really as nasty as Garbage Pail Kids. Maybe.
Oh yeah, those
Garbage Pail Kids with using real names
mm-hmm.
that could create a lot more problems than wacky practices.
Yeah. And then, so I guess what, they took a break in 68 and then in 69, that's when they came out with those poster size or
wacky ads, and they used to even call them wacky billboards because they sort of looked like billboards.
And there was a lot more artwork. Like, the traditional card was printed below, and up top there was actually more jokes and more artwork.
Yeah, and some of them had four different products on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then...
There's one particular sticker in that set that's very, very scarce. It's good and empty for good and plenty.
Okay.
And that is valued at around $1,500.
And was that because that was pulled quickly from the run, or...?
Actually, I guess it's the whole set with that is valued at about $1,500. Mm-hmm. I think that the sticker itself is like $900.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's a good part of the whole set.
Excellent.
Yeah, I guess they must have gotten a cease and desist letter on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a really neat story of what happened to me. I was at a outdoor flea market one day, and there was a little stack of the wacky ads on a dealer's table.
Right.
And I said, how much are they? And they said 50 cents. I forked out 50 cents. I didn't even bother looking through them. I could see they were in decent condition.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in the car on the way home and decided to look at them. And there was a good and empty in that little pile. Boy, did I scream.
I mean, it was so much easier to find things back at a garage sale in the 70s, maybe even
absolutely.
Early 80s. Everything's kind of started to change in the mid 80s. People started thinking everything's worth something, and you know, you couldn't find those Mickey Mantle baseball cards randomly anymore like that.
No, well, that's it. We used to go around looking for baseball cards when you could find them
at right.
flea markets and garage sales, and if we would see some non-sport cards, of course, we would buy those as well.
So, getting back to 1973, when they went to what we all picture the sticker form, what was the impetus behind that? I mean, that was like a golden decision.
Well, I don't really know whose decision that was, but it was certainly a good one. I guess they thought about it and figured that children would like sticking them all over.
Mm-hmm. Which they did,
and,
to the chagrin of their
popularity, besides the artwork and the jokes.
Much to the chagrin of teachers.
Your notebooks, your desk, and everything like that.
And in, I guess, from 1973 to 76, there were 488 different types of cards made, and they were in series, different series.
Yeah, there were 16 series.
Mm-hmm.
And the 16th series is by far the hardest one to obtain.
And that sounds like, to me, that's marketing genius, because... You know, you look forward to the next series and the next series and the next series.
Yeah, well, as they got up into the higher series, those are the ones that are more valuable today because kids did lose interest. They didn't print as many and they didn't sell as many, so they're much harder to find.
I read somewhere that I want to say 1974. Is it true that Wackies outsold baseball cards?
Yes, that's what I've read in reports, and that's really amazing.
That is amazing, because 74, you're still, you know, you're still in the tail end, I guess, of baseball card collecting, the golden age.
They should have called them non-wacky cards instead of baseball cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
All right, on that note, we're going to take another break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, and we're going to talk some more about Wackies, and then we're also going to talk about your publication that's been around for... I want to say around 1990 or so.
1990, October of 1990.
Wow, that was a quick 20 years, huh?
Yeah, it really was.
Roxanne, we'll be right back, and we're with Roxanne Tozer, and we're talking about Wacky Packs and non-sports cards and a lot of other great things. We'll be right back.
If good timing is essential, then it's essential you keep it right here. Time Travel will be right back.
Here we are again.
Here we are again.
Here we are again.
Here we are again.
Thank you.
speeding bullets. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman. Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
Chocolate flavored Bosco is mighty good for me. Mama puts it in my milk for extra energy. Bosco gives me iron and sunshine vitamin D.
Oh, I love Bosco. That's the drink for me.
Announcing the 1966 Chun King.
Sleek, arrogant, a different breed of chow mein. You see it instantly in its bold new bean sprouts, its crisp, aggressive water chestnuts. Talk about extras. You want bucket bamboo shoots? Power onions? You got it, mister, in the 1966 Chungking Chow Mein. Outside, too, you'll notice the revolutionary styling of its round cans right away. Wraparound labels, more pickup in the two cans taped together. That's standard equipment on this baby. Look at the way she handles. In the bottom can, independent vegetable suspension. And in the top can, where the action is, over 27 cubic inches of succulent Chungking sauce, loaded with high-performance chicken. Step up to the tuned chow mein, the 1966 Chungking. Noodles optional.
Warning, warning, Will Robinson. Time travel is back.
Okay, we're back. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi.
Okay, so I'm dying to do this little roll call here. I went through all the cards that exist, and I kind of put a list together of my favorites.
Okay.
And I'm gonna spit these out, and then I want to ask you what your favorite cards are, and Jeff can chime in. I mentioned Blunderbread. That's always been one of my favorites. Wormy Packages, one of the more famous ones. Plastered Peanuts, Cap'n Crud, Crackola Crayons, Land of Quakes, Nutley's Quit, Shot Wheels, Sicken of the Sea, Play Dumb Moldy Clay, Sunstroke Creature Crackers, Blast Blue Ribbon Beer, Killy Putty, Mountain Goo, Coffin Mate, Shrunken Donuts, Play Skull, Gadzooka, Kookade, Chock Full of Nuts and Bolts. Those are the ones that they really stood out to me, and whether it's the artwork, the jokes, things of that nature. Off the top of your head, what are some of your all-time favorites, Roxanne?
Well, as I mentioned, I like Weekies.
Right, Weekies.
Cover Goal, because of the goal. And it's really a weird-looking, scary card. That one is a scary card.
Right.
I like Run Tony.
That's a great one.
Second series.
Mm-hmm.
And what else? Well, Band-Aid, I guess I like that one because it's harder, and people are always talking about it. I like some of the tops, like the bean ball and the full ball. I think they're very witty.
It's kind of funny how they parodied themselves, isn't it?
Well, they did that so that they could say, well, what do you care if we parody you? We're parodying ourselves. That's why they did that.
And Jeff, why don't you chime in? What are some of your favorites?
Well, I think many of them have been listed. A-Jerks, I remember. That was one that stood out to me. And I just brushed my teeth this morning with Crust toothpaste, and my teeth are gone. They cleared up completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I stopped using that toothpaste a long time ago.
Is there ever anyone on record who actually used these products, Dan?
Right. Exactly. Did you, Roxanne, when you collected these, did you ever stick them on anything?
Yeah. We have some stuck on one of our file cabinets here in the office.
Uh-huh. So, like, from day one?
They were stickers that weren't in very good condition to begin with.
Okay.
So it was okay to stick them. Otherwise, we wouldn't have done that.
Right. Now, I guess it was around 85 or so, you published a book that's called The Beat Goes On, and I think it was republished in 88, and then maybe another version in 97. What's the impetus behind that book, and how did you do your research and things of that nature?
Is it a book about Sonny and Cher?
It was very difficult. There was one non-sport book out done by Mark and Richard Sykes that just listed all kinds of non-sport cards.
Okay.
And they had a listing in there for wacky packages. And in that listing, they listed all of the stickers. Well, the listing was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Every time that I tried to sort some of the stickers that I had, I would just give up in disgust because it just never worked out by using their list. And I had a good friend by the name of Dave Chamberlain, who was very interested in non-sport cards in general and also the wacky packages. And he told me that he would take all the wacky package stickers and he would put them into the correct series. And he did. And there was also, and this was also with the help of George Wright, who is a very talented artist in, himself. And in fact, he did a few of the stickers for Tops at one time, just mm-hmm. in the recent sets, not in the early sets. And he was such a great collector. He kept every box, a wrapper for every set. He knew exactly what went together.
Right.
And so between the two of those people, we were finally able to organize all the wacky packages. And it was just a mystery to collectors at that time. So I started sending out just a free little brochure with as much information as I had at that time.
Mm-hmm.
We're so interested in it that we decided to do the booklets. And George Wright did the covers. Very, very good artwork. And it just was something that was really needed in the hobby. I was more interested at that time of providing information about which stickers went with which sets, more so than whether in the wacky ad you had long perforations or short perforations. And some of the wacky package collectors of today have just gotten into it so deeply.
Well, it's like record albums, you know, this version of the same album, that version of the same album.
Right.
Yeah.
I just thought at that time people wanted to put sets together. And we had a mail order business before the magazine.
Okay.
And so I used to sell the sets. I didn't care which series. They were all $12. It didn't matter if there were special stickers in them. All $12. Including the 16th series.
I'll send you a PayPal payment after the show. I'll take three
orders. Yeah,
right.
Do I wish I had some of those back.
It must have been a thrill to get your hands on your booklet at that time. There's just a thirst of trying to learn more about them. I mean, it's
it
not
was.
Like
it was
you
really
didn't have the internet.
Exciting.
And you also got a lot of cooperation from a lot of the people at Tops, like Mr. Lynch and folks like that. How did you become friends with a lot of those folks?
Really funny with Jay Lynch. He called me up one day. He was working at that time for Diamond, not the distributor,
mm-hmm.
but Diamond, who did sticker sets from Chicago.
Okay.
He wanted something. I forget exactly what it was. I didn't know who he was. And we started talking and everything, and he eventually told me that he had done some work for Tops and was still doing some work for Tops. And I looked him up in art books at the, comic books at the library and found out that he was one of the artists from the 60s, the underground artists. And he was mentioned in every book that you picked up. But he's just such an unassuming person. You would never know that. One time we were in Chicago. That's where he lived for many years. And we were in Chicago for a show. I think it was a baseball national. And we were sitting in the lobby of a hotel. Mm-hmm. And Grass Green was with us. He's now deceased. He was also an underground artist. And some people walked in, and they recognized Grass, and they were talking to him. And they introduced us all, and they asked Jay what he did. He said, I do covers for Non-Sport Update magazine. I fell on the floor laughing, if that was his claim to fame. He was so much more famous than that.
That sounds like a real compliment to you.
It was, and he's just a great person.
We're going to take one more break in just a moment. But before we do, I just wanted to ask you, when Wacky started to really pick up steam and become popular, there were other companies that tried to copy them. And, of course, they couldn't keep up. What were some of those companies?
Well, Fleer.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Dunruss must have done something, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with a lot of those things, they were line art rather than the full art of wacky packages. And I really think that's what made them less popular.
And they just didn't have the same creative people on staff, the same artists.
No, they didn't. I mean, these people are so creative, like Art Spiegelman and Mark Newgarden did some of the later ones. He's very popular, very, very good artist. Well, they just have there's David Gross, who used to buy wacky packages from me. I first started selling them, and now he's one of their top artists for wacky packages.
He's a recruiter.
Nice guy.
I think I remember reading once that some of the artists at Tops, the writers, would go to the grocery store and do like a whole shopping and just to get ideas on other products that they haven't done yet?
Yeah, absolutely. Jay would tell a story about being in a train station.
Uh-huh.
At night, he and Art Spiegelman looking at some of these things that they bought and coming up with ideas.
That's hilarious. I can just see him showing up with this big, giant cart of food and stuff. And
oh, it must have just been a scream. I'd like to talk a little bit about the Sully Non-Sport Card shows when we come back.
Absolutely.
The Wacky Package reunion that we had.
Yeah, we're gonna spend our last segment talking about Non-Sport Update magazine, the Philly show that you're so integrally a part of, and things of that nature.
Okay,
that's really a good point about the line drawn art too, because you know obviously line drawn art it doesn't look like a painted ad in a magazine. You know
that's right.
Doesn't look like the real It doesn't fool your eyes the same way.
No, it doesn't.
All right, excellent. This is our last break, and we'll be back in about 2 or 3 minutes. Again, our listeners, we're joined with Roxanne Tozer. We're going to be talking about Non-Sport Update magazine in this last segment. We're going to talk about the very popular Philly show, and we'll be right back. This is Time Travel.
Ajax cuts grease faster than any other leading cleanser.
You stop paying the elbow tax when you start cleaning with Ajax.
Ajax really polishes as it cleans.
So use Ajax, the foaming cleanser.
Floats the dirt right down the drain.
By gosh, they're right. Foaming action Ajax makes even the dirtiest pan shine like new in a jiffy.
So use Ajax!
What walks downstairs alone or in pairs and makes a slinkety sound? A spring, a marvelous thing. Everyone knows it's Slinky. It gives a big lift when wrapped as a gift, a very likable toy. It's falling in place, brings smiles to your face, something kids can enjoy. It's Slinky, for fun it's a wonderful toy. It's Slinky, it's fun for a girl and a boy. And Slinky Mobiles with big slinky wheels and pistons that move as you go. It makes a great sound when you pull it around. The driver's an old-timey fellow. A slinky dog, a slinky train, many more wonderful toys. You tug the string, they do their thing. They're great for girls and boys. They're slinkies, really wonderful toys. They're slinkies, they're fun for girls and boys.
Root juicy. Hey, how about a nice Hawaiian punch?
Sure.
You taste 7 kinds of fruit in Hawaiian punch. 7 kinds of fruit in Hawaiian punch. Hawaiian punch is made with 7 kinds of fruit for a one-of-a-kind fruit taste.
Hawaiian Punch Fruit Punch with 10% real fruit juice for a real fruit juicy taste.
Hawaiian punch is made with 7 kinds of fruit
for a one-of-a-kind fruit taste.
Nowadays is a nut or a kook or a fool.
Just turn back the clock and recall what you said when you were a kid in school.
Welcome back to Time Travel.
And we're back. We're with Roxanne Tozer, and we're going to talk about
an awesome
magazine that's been around for 20 years called Non-Sport Update Magazine. What's the genesis behind that, Roxanne?
Boy, that was really needed. There was a time right around that time that there were a lot of sports strikes, baseball, football. I don't remember exactly what. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the non-sport dealers got into non-sport cards. And they were trying to drive up the prices unbelievably. I'd have these dealers calling me and saying, you're going to be just so happy because the prices are really going to jump in non-sport cards. Well, mm-hmm. We didn't want the prices to jump in non-sport cards. Everybody was just happy the way things were.
Right.
So we decided that a magazine was needed with a price guide to stabilize prices, and that was the impetus, and it worked. We were able to stabilize the prices until the strikes were over and the baseball and football card dealers got out of the non-sport hobby.
Mm-hmm. And then this publication in the early days, it's much more than just a listing of cards and things of that nature. They're just really great articles, behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yes, we've been so fortunate. We have such wonderful writers over the years.
Mm-hmm. How has the magazine improved over the years, in your opinion?
Well, in the beginning, we had mostly black and white. Color mm-hmm. was too expensive.
Right.
Now the magazine can be all color.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, things are not as good as maybe they were for a while because of the economy.
Naturally, right? But hopefully that will turn around.
and the magazine is slimmer than it was.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when we used to laugh because we had so many ads that we actually had to turn some away. Boy, I wish it was like that again.
a lot of magazine distributors feel that way. Yeah. So, you know, obviously, folks can come to your website.
Right.
Which would be www.nonsportupdate.com.
Yes.
And what's a subscription like? Is it like a, what would they do?
Well, they can subscribe online, mm-hmm. or of course they can always call us. And a subscription is $28 for 6 copies.
Mm-hmm.
That's, we print every other month. And that's it. It's a very simple thing.
And they can get back issues too.
Yes, we have back issues for sale.
Because a couple of them had some great Wacky Pack articles.
There's a Chicago non-sport card show, and it's a 10th anniversary show.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Malero really backs a charity called the Pediatric Oncology Treasure Chest. And so he asked us to do a variant issue of our magazine. The only thing that's really different is the cover.
Mm-hmm.
But we always have a special card inside, and he was able to make arrangements to get Topps to do a costume card for Star Wars with real Ewok fur. And he asked us to sell this magazine for $20, giving $10 to the charity.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that sounded a little crazy in this economy,
mm-hmm.
but we did only 300 copies, and it was really, really popular. The show isn't until September, and we had to put back some issues to sell at the show.
I'm confused. So
the rest are promised.
I'm confused. If there's real Ewok fur, then there must be real Ewoks.
I think there might be. Haven't you ever seen any?
Ladies and gentlemen, not a single Ewok was
only
harmed.
Only in the movies.
Not a single Ewok was harmed during the making of this special limited edition variant.
Excellent.
So, there's a prop store in England
right.
that has this Ewok fur. So I guess all the Ewoks live there.
Okay.
They get it off their combs or something, you know. Were you always interested in writing and publishing, like when you were a little girl? Did you have an English – were you interested in literature and writing, or did it come more because of the need with the cards?
No, I've always liked to write. I did articles for Tough Stuff magazine before we started ours. After we started our magazine, he wasn't interested in me writing for his anymore. Mm-hmm. But I've always liked to write, and I'm a constant reader.
Mm-hmm.
I love books.
The Philly show, which is extremely popular. Tell us about the origin of, you know, how long has that show been around, what your participation in that is?
Well, the Richters, Frank and Phyllis Richter, are the ones that started that show.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 1984. And Frank called me up and said he was thinking of starting a non-sport card show. Would I set up with a table? Because at that time we were non-sport card dealers. And I said, oh, sure, I will, but I think you're nuts. I don't know if you'll be able to get this off the ground. But we have done every single show that he's had, and we're getting ready for the 54th show. In the beginning, it was once a year, but then shortly thereafter, he started it twice a year. And several years ago, he came to us and said that the show was starting to put him in the poorhouse, and that he was thinking of no longer having the show. This was before the 50th. And we said, mm-hmm. Frank, you have to be around for the 50th show. We said, what if we look around and see what we can do to help? Well, we found a very good place to have the show in Allentown, Pennsylvania, at the Merchant Square Mall, 1901 South 12th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And the next show is September 9th, or pardon me, October 9th and 10th. And so it was much more reasonable than where he was having the show.
Right.
And we said to him, how about if we partner and we start running this show in Allentown? And he said, great. And so that's what we did, and that's how we became involved in this show. If we didn't do that, there wouldn't be a Philly non-sport card show, and that would really be a shame.
It's
great. People just love it.
I discovered that show by accident. I'm in the film business now. I was in radio for about 11, 12 years. And before that, I was in the magazine business in sales. And I used to go in Allentown occasionally for meetings. And I think I saw an ad in the newspaper one day for that show. And I just showed up randomly around noontime. So I might have crossed paths with you going back to 1993 or so.
Yeah.
Maybe I bought some cards off you.
The show was never actually held in Philadelphia, even though it's
about, it was Allentown we're talking about, right?
Outside of Philly in Bensalem,
mm-hmm.
and another location outside of Philly. But I said even if the show was in China, it would still be called the Philly Non-Sport Card Show.
Mm-hmm. We're going to be concluding the program in about a minute and a half or so. What would you say to people, especially the younger people, that have discovered Wacky Packs because of an uncle or because of a friend or what have you? How would they track down some of these? I mean, obviously there's eBay and whatnot. What kind of advice would you have to people that want to start collecting Wacky Packs today?
Well, they could certainly come to one of the non-sport card shows. They're always available there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty online, as you said, on eBay.
Right.
And usually the prices aren't too bad.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that they still show up somewhat at garage sales. I don't know about actual flea markets.
I actually scored about 40 or so cards a couple of months ago at a garage sale.
Yeah.
So I was 8 years old again. It's like,
oh, sure.
I was negotiating.
I always have Wacky Packages on top of my albums when we do these shows. Even if we're just selling the magazine, I'll bring the Wacky Package album because people are just so delighted to see them. And it just brings back all their childhood memories.
Yeah, there's a big kid in all of us. It's always there.
Right, absolutely.
Well, we just had an awesome time breaking bread with you today and talking about something that brings
breaking
back...
Breaking
blunder bread.
Of course.
Jeff's the king of the one-liners. And I just, again, thank you so much for spending some time with us this Saturday morning and in educating some of our listeners about some of the background information on the origin of Wackies. And I hope you enjoyed it.
I certainly did. And we could mention that The Beat Goes On is still available for sale. The prices aren't really not up to date, but the lists are great. We have an alphabetical index. That really helps when you're sorting a large amount of Wacky Packages.
I'm holding the 1997 copy.
On our site as well as the magazine.
I'm holding the 1997 copy in my hand right now. I'm looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
30 years of Wacky Packages, it says.
Yeah, that was 30 years.
So, yeah, definitely. You definitely want to order that, and you want to subscribe to the magazine for sure. I have a couple of those back issues that did talk about Wackies, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did. We had a special magazine. Well, in 1997, the cover of our magazine was done by Jay Lynch, mm-hmm. and it parodied our magazine. It was called Non-Warts Update. It was so popular that we sold out of that issue. So in 2004, we reprinted the cover and just have the Wacky Package articles inside. And I think there's a few ads, too. But
boy, that's a milestone to have Jay do that for you. That's great.
Oh, yeah, it was. And he's just so brilliant. He always comes up with great ideas. You really don't even have... When he did the early covers of our magazine, I would just mention something, and he would do it, and it was great, and it was just what I was thinking about or better.
That's awesome.
Well, it is awesome to have a talent like that.
I learned through your message board that you've been on Non-Sport Update has been seen on The Simpsons in a...
Yeah.
So it's pretty good.
If you didn't blink.
Yeah, but it's there.
Very cool.
It was there.
Yeah, those Simpson writers are always, they're like us, big kids.
Yeah, right.
Well, Roxanne, thank you so much for stepping into our time machine today. And
I enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Roxanne.
And
back to a great time in our life.
Have a great rest of the summer, and hope to talk to you again soon.
I hope so.
Thanks.
Thank you, time travelers.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this edition of Time Travel, and we hope to be back next month with some new and exciting guests. And we will be talking to you soon. This is Dan signing off.
And this is Jeff. You're listening to TimeTravelIsPossible.com.
At the Chatterbox in Augusta, New Jersey.
Chatterbox Drive-In. Come on down for lunch.
Take care, folks.